Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about a topic where absolutely no one has escaped. Everyone has been touched by it, and everyone has struggled with it at some point. And some people are saying, I am so overdone with this. It's just, I'm just over it. And, you know, even yesterday, I had a conversation with someone, and I used the word, I'm done, done, done. And they're going, what's the word done mean? And we all know this because we're going to be talking about pain today. What is pain? Where does it really affect you? Are we talking about physical pain, psychological pain, pain of the soul even? You know, I think as I've looked through my many decades of life, I think the word stress and the word pain has really come to be a catch-all phrase. When something is off, it's a stress. When something's been there too long and it starts to affect you to a point where it's like something poking at you, then it's called pain. And then when it really gets really loud, it's called a really bad disease or a life-ending change or an end-of-lifetime or contract. Can anyone relate? Many of these times, if you've been in healthcare long enough, you say, you know, I see some patterns here. Today we'll talk about those patterns. We'll talk about words and how we could see or source what might be going on with us and how we might say, you know, maybe I'll just change my perception. I'll change my definition, or maybe I'll change my reporting next time I go to the physician because, quite honestly, he just might not be hearing me, or she. Today, my guest is Dr. Anish Singla. The book is Why It Hurts, A Physician's Insight on the Purpose of Pain. Dr. Anish, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm really happy to be talking about this topic.
So don't you think pain's starting to get to be a catch-all phrase, just like stress?
It sure is. You know, Dr. Jeanette, I think that what a lot of times happens is when something is bothering us, you know, our bodies are, you know, we want to be in tune with our bodies, and pain really is an alarm system. And so when something's bothering us, whether it's a physical injury or even something that we're anxious about or worried about, sometimes if we don't address those problems, the body will continue to send that alarm system to us by sounding that pain alarm. And so I think it's important that we are aware of pain and how pain can actually help us and benefit us, and also how we can learn to grow and adapt when we are faced with pain.
You know, I've been a lifetime ball carrier, I will call it, of migraine. And I won't call it suffering because I don't suffer. Of course, there was a period of 2 years there where I was ready to just like, I'm just done with this, really big done. But, and, you know, we really find the pain is relative. You know, you go into the hospital, the doctors, it's on a scale of 1 to 10. Well, I can tell you my last kidney stone, when she said 1 to 10, I was ready to bat her right out of the room, telling her it was 1,000 plus, get out of my way. You know, so we really think about how much pain can someone take and how much kind of like resonance in our being can we actually tolerate. And I think that's where the levels of pain, types of pain, and the source of it really is different for everyone, correct?
Absolutely. I think it's so important to understand why we're experiencing pain, and I really do think that pain points us in a certain direction to identify an underlying problem. For example, if you've got a toothache, it could be, it could be nothing. It could be something very mild, like, just biting on a hard object. But also, it could be a sign that you may have an infection or a problem, and it's an important thing to be addressed if it doesn't go away on its own. So I think that pain really is a symptom of a problem. We should use that to our advantage to better understand our bodies and also to, alert us when there's a problem.
Don't you think sometimes I think in history we look at it that as the professions of medical history has evolved, it's really come up to say that you go to the doctor because you hurt. It used to be because something was wrong. You had an infection or something was broken. We think back to the cowboys and Indians or the miners, or they couldn't breathe or whatever in the early 1900s. And then it evolved to every little hurt, you needed to go to the doctor, and they were going to, quote, fix you. I know myself, being a naturopathic physician, after what they call the traditional people can't fix them, and they get their 6 months to live, they come running to natural health care, and they say, fix me, because everybody else can't. So I think as we look at it, have people potentially gotten to the point where they don't listen along the way and maybe make a slight adjustment? Or do they consistently want to be out of pain so they can run their life as they choose?
Well, that's a great question. I think that, pain is such an individual thing. It's hard to generalize. I think that there's certain people that, do really try to be in tune with their bodies and try to make sure they're doing the right thing along the way. And the right thing could be taking care of themselves and eating, properly, exercising, et cetera, the things that we believe are good for our bodies at this stage. And obviously, there's lots of folks who very much believe in trying to stick to natural, types of cures or diets or whatnot. And, I think that, you as an individual have to decide what's best for you, and also just your body better than anybody else. And I think that, lots of times patients come in to see me and I ask them and I give them options, and they look at me and they say, well, you're the doctor. And I actually look back at them and I say, yes, but you're the patient. And so
I
think that, a colleague of mine used the phrase, you're the, when he was talking to one of his patients, and said, think of yourself as the CEO of your own body. You know your body better than anybody else, and what I can do is serve as a guide and give you some suggestions and some ideas and help you along the way, but ultimately you're the one who's going to have to decide what's best for you. And I think that with regards to pain, you've got to look at pain as a symptom of, a potential problem, and how you choose to address it is very important. Certainly natural therapies, traditional allopathic medicine, whatever it is, if it's still bothering you and it doesn't go away on its own, or it's a sign of a serious problem, that's when you have to go get it addressed.
Let's talk about, can we always find the cause? That's a mantra of our profession and also of yours. Find the root cause. What is really going on here? And sometimes we say primary care, well, they in the past have addressed pain as, let's just take away the pain. If on our first test we don't see anything, well, let's just give them something to stop the pain. And I think that's where we got in a lot of trouble with the opioid addictions and a lot of medications and drugs in the late 1900s. And now we're kind of rethinking that, saying, is that really the best? Don't you think in history we've kind of played out some sort of that scenario?
Well, I certainly agree that, it's very important to strive to find the underlying source of the pain. And it's not always easily identifiable,
right,
but I think we strive to do that. And I think that, 20, 30 years ago, we may have sort of said, okay, you come in with pain. We may not have even had the technology at that time to really sort out what the underlying cause was, but certainly technology has improved. But I think we were much more keen on just sort of treating pain in isolation, just as a problem itself, and throwing medications, perhaps opiates, at that problem. And I think now we've seen what happens when you are on opiates for a long time, and we have other medical problems that result from that, as well as obviously the opiate crisis that we're facing. And so we've kind of seen the pendulum shift in the other direction. What we want to do is try to sort out the underlying problem, the source of the pain, treat that underlying source, and hopefully the pain's going to either go away or at least get better, and we can try to minimize the use of opiate types of medications.
Yeah, because a lot of people now are starting to scream about, they say, well, I don't have access to health care. I don't have access to the drugs that I need. And then we say, is it really access or is it more abuse? Or, but I also look at it too, you know, when you go to the physicians a lot of times, or even myself, you know, we prescribe in certain states too, and they're like, this is what I want. And when you're saying this is what I want, are you saying that you want to have that balance of some sort of altered state, or are you really looking to get out of the space you're in? So that's really where you end up with, are you on a path towards helping yourself and healing yourself, or are you on the path of abusing and misusing any type of therapies or treatments?
Right, absolutely. I think that, again, that's so much, it's so easy to generalize you know, across the country or in a state or in a particular area, what's happening. But I think this is where the individuality of the person and the physician, really the patient and the physician, really comes into play. You know, it's our job to assess patients individually to try to understand that individual's needs. And it's important for us not to generalize. If someone comes in and is in a lot of pain, we don't want to automatically and is requesting opiate medications. You know, we have to be careful to do a thorough evaluation. We don't want to just sort of say, okay, this person appears to be, you know, suffering from an addiction disorder. We don't want to do that. We want to really make sure we're doing a good job of assessing the patient, understanding what the potential sources of pain are, and then devising an appropriate plan.
And again, today we are speaking with Dr. Anish Singla, and his book is Why It Hurts, A Physician's Insights on the Purpose of Pain. Dr. Anish, can you share with us what the definition of, like, pain is? Some people will say, I stubbed my toe, I have to run to the doctor. Some people will say, they just took out one of my kidneys, now I'm in pain. So it's really very variable, but how do you, you know, because everybody comes in with the word. Everybody, I mean, why do you go to the doctor? I'm in pain. I'm in that place I don't want to be, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's lots of ways that we, you know, sort of interpret and define pain. I'll start off with the definition that I think is very widely accepted, and that's through the International Association for the Study of Pain. They define a pain as an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience that's associated with actual or potential tissue damage or described in terms of such damage. So, you know, really that's a pretty broad definition. So, and I think that pain is a very subjective experience. And if you do stub your toe or you have a surgery to remove a kidney, you know, different people are going to interpret that pain differently, even though it may have been the exact same pain producer or pain generator. And so that's what's so fascinating about pain, is that it is highly individual.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes people will come in, they'll say, I'm in pain. Don't you hear me? Don't you get it? Don't you know what that is? But then we look at a restaurant situation. If we have 100 people and they all go into the steakhouse and everybody gets the same thing, is it really all the same thing, and are we, in our perception of that, having it the same? You know, it's really about our perception of the pain versus what the actual pain may or may not present as. In other words, if I'm super angry and I really had a fight with my husband and I'm really ticked off and now I've got a migraine and I go in and say, I have a migraine, well, that's one relative thing, but the argument, the aggravation could accentuate my perception of that pain, and now I'm no longer a 4 or 5, I'm on a 10, you know? So it's really what contributes to that path of pain or that onset of pain?
Well, I think that that's a, you know, those are a couple of great questions, and I believe that with pain, again, just because it is so subjective, even in a laboratory setting, the exact same quantifiable stimulus can result in a different pain interpretation amongst different people. And I think that, again, part of it is, you know, you've got a physical stimulus, and even that physical stimulus may be interpreted differently. And then obviously it's that psychological aspect of how you're actually thinking about your pain. For example, if you're in an athletic competition, and you are, you know, you're trying to win the national championship. You know, thankfully the UNC Tar Heels won recently, and that's my school. So, but you know, when you have, for example, a player who's injured, who's got an ankle injury, and you're fighting to win the national championship, you're going to kind of block the pain out. You're going to ignore it. You're going to push through it because you have a goal in sight. You see yourself as a player who's fighting for that national title or that national championship. And I think that, but again, to a person who may not be playing in a high-stakes sports competition, they may look at their ankle and say, oh gosh, this is so disabling, I can't do anything, you know, I don't want to do anything because every time I get up it hurts. So I think that that's, again, how your ultimate interpretation and your perception of the pain is going to be influenced by, you know, whatever narrative it is that you're sort of telling yourself. But the second part of what you were asking about, you know, sort of walking in, let's say, to see a physician and saying, I've got so much pain, I've got this terrible thing going on. I mean, you know, pain is one of those things we don't have a lab test to measure. We don't have an easy scan or a blood test that we can do to measure your pain. Pain is what you or the patient are telling us as physicians. And, you know, think of pain as sort of being a symptom of a problem that you're experiencing. And imagine it's sort of locked up in a safe in your house that only you know the combination to. So in other words, you can go in and you can look at that pain, but no one else can. So you've got to describe what's in that safe when you are talking to a physician or talking to a friend or a colleague. And that's very hard to do for some people, because when you're in so much pain, you really, you know, sometimes finding the right words and the right descriptions aren't possible. But we as physicians, we as pain physicians and all physicians, really, we have to sort of, you know, to use a colleague's definition, we have to be the ones to set the temperature on the thermostat. You know, we as a society need to say, well, you know what, these are certain things, maybe they're injuries or certain problems that we will be willing to throw, you know, very powerful pain medications like opiates at to treat. But we also at the same time have to set the thermostat at a reasonable level where if someone stubs their toe, we're not necessarily going to put them on opiate medications. So that's kind of where we, I think, as pain physicians and physicians in general, really have to be the ones to set that temperature on the thermostat.
Yeah, and that's a very tough place to be, because really what you're looking at is you're trying to decipher the physical pain from the mental, emotional, or spiritual, or whatever else that might be that's contributing to that. So in other words, it may present as a one or a two, and anything that contributes to that really escalated, and all efforts might seem to be ineffective, you know, and people will be saying, but you didn't fix me, you didn't fix me, and it's sort of like the old adage, but you didn't tell me what your exact problem was. Your exact problem was you might be having issues at home. You might be having issues at your job. You might be very fearful of something. You may not be telling me the whole story. You're just telling me a piece of it. And I think that's where a lot of success and failures in pain therapy, pain management, and pain, even pain reporting, has really been in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that expectations are a huge, very important part of the conversation. And, you know, in my book, I talk a little bit about expectations and sort of my formula for expectations and happiness. You know, happiness, you know, is equivalent to reality minus your expectations. It's sort of the formula that I use. And, you know, if you have really high expectations, so in other words, you are expecting to have 100% pain relief, but the reality is that you're only maybe 50% better, you're going to be pretty unhappy with that type of treatment. And that may drive you to take more, you know, opiate painkillers, which, you know, we know where that, you know, can go to real problem areas. So I think that we as pain physicians also have to really set those expectations. And, you know, the expectations that I set for most of my patients that have a chronic condition that there may not be a real simple or easy fix or cure for, you know, we are shooting for a 50% reduction in pain. And I make that very clear, because by making it clear up front and helping patients understand that, we may avoid some, you know, bigger problems down the road by over-treatment of those symptoms.
And a lot of times, too, people will seek out physicians that have helped their friends. That person has the same thing, quote, that I do, so I'm going to go there and they'll take care of me. Or they will, so that the, what they're really doing is they're saying, maybe that physician has an insight into, quote, how I'm feeling, you know, or where I might be having some other issues, and they will be kind of like joined together. I think we see this quite often. So when you then end up in a specialty, like when you go to a heart doctor, totally different experience than when you're going to a primary care physician, totally different than when anybody, you know, that you might see, you're going into their wheelhouse. In other words, you're diversifying it down so that you can go into a better specialty where someone might be able to, quote, speak your language, right?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, that's the beauty of sort of our system. You know, we do have folks that are, you know, generalists and primary care physicians that kind of look at everything from multiple different perspectives and is looking kind of at what, you know, could be causing the problem, whether it's pain or not a, necessarily a pain issue, and trying to put that all together. And then you also have the specialists who, you know, really are focused in on maybe one particular area, as you said, cardiology, focused on the heart. But at the same time, you know, realizing that there can be interplay with other organ systems that could be playing a role. And so I think it's a very important dynamic to have, you know, specialist physicians and generalist types of physicians in healthcare, because it's that team approach that really helps. And nowhere is that more important than pain. We as pain physicians, I mean, we rely on you know, underlying physicians that are experts in their areas. For example, you know, in certain cases, we work a lot with orthopedic physicians, and you know, orthopedic physicians are you know, a lot of times treating patients with arthritic conditions. They're treating patients with underlying spinal problems, and we work really in conjunction with them to know when, you know, how to devise the appropriate type of therapy, when surgery may be necessary, you know, to devise that treatment plan, just like we would with a primary care physician who, you know, may communicate with us that, you know, there's a patient here who's maybe had a history of alcohol abuse or some other substance abuse, where we might want to be a little bit more careful before starting patients on opiate painkillers.
You know, it's really interesting. I had this neurologist probably maybe 10 years ago. At that time when I had the migraine headache, I mean, I had a head pain for 2 years, and I probably had about 100 tests, and I specifically remember the one day she sat down in front of me and she said, and I said, can you answer where this pain or what this pain is about? And she looked at me and said, I can't find the answer to your pain on any test. And what she was struggling to see it as a number on a test, instead of seeing me as where something might be off, you know, or whatever. Really, I had needed chiropractic work after that, massage work after that, needed to change my job, needed to change a relationship, needed to just let go of some things, where all of that surface stuff worked out and they dissipated, you know. But she was just so focused on looking for a structural thing wrong on a test that I went back for a repeat appointment about maybe 6 months after that, and actually she had quit the profession. I think she was just struggling so hard that she could not find it on a test, and let's hope she went on her own spiritual journey after that to be able to find that pain is not it on a test. You can't, you know, you can't take an MRI and say there's your pain right there, when, as you've known, sometimes we fix those things and the pain might still be there, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely correct. You know, we try to look for a structural cause, but if there's not a structural problem, it doesn't necessarily mean the patient's not experiencing pain.
Right.
It just could be a more complicated situation, as you alluded to. If you've got stress that may be bringing on your migraines, well, you know, there's no structural issue that is, you know, unfortunately there wasn't on a scan, because a structural issue might have indicated a more serious problem. But it sounds like alleviating that stress, alleviating some of that tension that you were experiencing, that may have been a causative or contributing factor to the migraines was actually what helped you. And I think we as physicians really have to be careful to understand that about pain, because we don't want to treat pain as a structural problem. We don't want to just as a structural problem. Obviously, when it is a structural problem, sometimes things add up very nicely and we can really get a good outcome, but we don't want to just treat it as a structural problem, because again, like you said, we do have to treat the whole person, the individual, how they're experiencing the pain, what they're going through, what else could be contributing to the pain. For example, if you've got a structural injury and now you're depressed because of it, because you can't play the sport that you want to play or do the activities you want to do, you got to be careful, because you know, when you fix the problem, that person could take a while to get out of that depression. So again, very important to kind of look at the whole person.
You know, it was so interesting. People that come to me, they come to you for pain, but they come to me, I want wellness. And then you have to ask them, what does that mean? And they're like, well, you know, irregardless of their health, their mental condition or physical condition, they want to be like they were when they were 30. You know, so I mean, that is such an elusive thing, but no matter how far under the kink they are, they want wellness, and at all costs, they're going to get it. But yet, that's another example of perception. And you say, well, at 30, what did you have? And they said, I had more time. I had better choices. I didn't make all these mistakes. I was able to walk better. I was able to smell the earth better. I was able to laugh more. And now I feel burdened with all of life. So really what they're saying is that wellness is a time that they really want to feel lighter. They wanted to shed some of that things. And I think some of that is similar with pain. They feel like all of that has, you know, come down on them. Bodies may close in. You'll have compressed discs. You'll have problems with sciatica. You may have back pain. Lower back pain is very common. Headaches, arthritis. These are all things that are shut down, pressed in, compressed. And we think, how can we lighten that load so that we're able to loosen things up so things might flow a little better? We're not going to be who we were when we were 30. Gosh, I don't want to be that age again ever anyway. But so many people will say that, you know, but really what they're looking for is that mental, emotional, physical lightness. And I think that's when you're in pain, that's what you're looking for too.
I agree. I think that, you know, pain does, you know, play a pretty heavy toll on who you are as an individual. But I think a lot of it is, again, thinking about, you know, how your ultimate perception is. And if you're 70 and you want to be feeling like you were when you were 30, well, again, it's about sort of understanding and setting expectations. I mean, you may be 70 chronologically, but, you know, your biological age might be a lot younger or a lot older, depending on how you've, you know, how well you've taken care of your body. I'm using the word well because we're talking about wellness here. But, you know, I think that really, you know, again, I think part of it has to do with expectations as well. If you are, you know, of the expectation that, you know, you'll never experience pain in your life, then I think that you may be disappointed. And as we age and our bodies, you know, undergo the aging process, yes, I think that people are more susceptible to injuries and degenerative problems that result in pain. And I think that if you kind of expect it, then I think you're going to be better prepared for it. So I think that the expectations around pain are very important. But at the same time, I also think that it's important for people to know that, you know, you are not alone. I mean, when you look around the United States, I mean, depending on the statistics that you're looking at, I mean, the Institute of Medicine states that there's 116 million people that suffer with chronic pain in the United States. And so, you know, it's about one in every three Americans, and that's not an insignificant number. So, you know, a lot of people, when they experience pain, you know, it's very isolating. But I think that if you share your pain, you talk to others about what, you know, what may be bothering them, you'll start to find that there's a lot of other people out there that suffer with it. And sometimes that, you know, that sort of sharing experience, that social aspect of things can help you, you know, perhaps come to a better place with understanding, you know, why you have the pain and where you're at in life.
speak a little bit about the word resilience, or the word hero. A lot of people have physical issues, and they have, quote, overcome them. We look at the breast cancer marches and runs and dinners and breakfasts. Right in the beginning, when breast cancer first started coming out and the mission started coming forth, it was really a big feat, and everybody held in high esteem all of those processes around that. Now it's gotten to be so common that people have kind of, oh, okay, yeah, cool, you know, and they've kind of let it to the side, and almost in effect, it's almost like dissing the people now who are coming along and having that experience, because it seemed to be so commonplace that they don't feel that they're being heard where in their journey. Do you know what I mean? I can remember this. I was at the grocery store one day, and there was two women talking, and one woman said, hey, I haven't seen you for a long time. And the other lady says, yes, you know, I've been dealing with, you know, my cancer. And the other lady says, oh, yeah, I see your port. I had one of those too. Okay, and then she just went on to talk about something else. So in other words, she didn't give validation to that person upon their path, you know, or what they might be going through. She was just kind of, oh, it's too common anymore, don't you think?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think that, again, it is important to give validation to that because, you know, again, the individual who's going through it is going to perhaps perceive their suffering a lot differently than another person. And so I think that it's important to, you know, do give some validation to that, just like it's important for us as physicians, as especially pain physicians, to validate when we have a patient who comes in with pain. You know, you'd never want to dismiss that because, again, pain is a subjective symptom, and you have to be able to treat anybody with pain and be respectful of that. And you know, in terms of the breast cancer example, I mean, again, that would have been to me a great opportunity to actually, you know, sort of share and be more compassionate and be more empathetic to what the other individual was going through, because, you know, the first patient was actually expressing the fact that she'd been through the same thing, but mm-hmm. luckily it hopefully succeeded in her path.
Yeah, it's tough, I'll tell you, when I think people don't, as we say, get heard. I think that's where pain sometimes seems to escalate. It turns up the volume. It turns up the fire in us. And, you know, I can remember this one time I was in clinic at school. I've said this many times on the radio. And we were in a clinical setting, and there were five male physicians and myself, and the patient was a woman. And she had had a stroke, and so she could not verbalize. And she was trying to verbalize to say things that were wrong or what she was trying to say, and her face was getting redder, and her body was starting to shake, and she was getting very, very much turned up the volume that they were not hearing her. They were all just complacently sitting there, you know, in their little white coats and everything else. And, you know, and it was just so... For some reason, I just reached out, set my hand on her back to kind of quell the volume. Do you know what I mean? In other words, I can remember distinctly the physician saying, took me out of there and said, don't you ever take away her pain. And I'm thinking, gosh, I must be awful powerful if I can take away her pain by putting my hand on her back, you know? And what I was really doing was just, I hear you. And, right. You know, just that touch of I hear you, I think it is a lot of times what a lot of people in very significant pain need. They need to, quote, be heard where they are, and then you can get on to the business of then treating them. Because sometimes that hearing, not hearing factor is what just keeps them inside of that prison walls. That sometimes you can say, I'll take down the walls, there you go, now tell me. Don't
right.
you think?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you really hit the nail on the head. I think just recognizing and you know, being able to be supportive is a huge part of allaying someone's anxiety or their anger over their pain. And just, you know, being able to validate that you know, hey, I see you. I know you're suffering.
Right.
I can see that. That can go a long way.
Yeah, especially now that we have the EMRs and everybody's on those damn computers. And I think that really does escalate things, you know. I had taken a client in, and they were sitting there, and they said to the doctor, "Hey, doc, you haven't even looked at me yet, you know, and the time is up." He said, "I got it all down. I put down what you told me in the computer here," and they handed him a pre-printed prescription. And it was like, whoa, have we come that far, you know? I think it's a touch and go situation where people right now are feeling the internal struggle.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that it is. I think that there's just so much pressure in healthcare, to be able to, you know, see a certain number of patients or to treat a certain number of people within a defined period of time. And I think that we also, again, have an aging population, so we are seeing that as a bigger burden on our healthcare system. And I agree. I think that, you know, we do spend a lot of money in the United States on healthcare, and a large portion of our GDP, almost 20%, not quite, but almost. And I think that that's a lot of money. And I think that we are looking for ways to streamline things so that we can accomplish, you know, really high quality, high value healthcare by spending, you know, less money. And I think that EMR is kind of a natural sort of a byproduct of that process. As we have become digital in so many other industries, we're seeing, you know, it permeate into healthcare probably a little slower than you're seeing in other industries. And so that is absolutely playing a role in that patient-physician interaction. I think that, unfortunately, you know, we don't really have artificial intelligence, which is kind of what you really need to be able to take care of patients. Because when you're a physician, when you're a healthcare provider, you're taking care of patients, you're really thinking about them, you know, as the whole person. At least we strive to. And with an EMR, you know, you're thinking of things as zeros and ones, which really, you know, people don't fit nicely into zeros and ones. And so it's a struggle to be able to sort of take that human experience, you know, provide, you know, the documentation that you need into an EMR and do that within a defined period of time. So I think that's something that we all struggle with, but I hope that the systems will improve and become more intuitive so that we can do a better job of preserving that patient-physician, relationship, but also capturing the data that we need to be able to document our encounters.
Right, because I can liken it back to, I lived in a very small town in the mountains in the 60s, and the physician would be, you know, maybe at the grocery store at lunch, and if you slipped and fell, he would know, saw you, and he knew which way you fell, which way you torqued your body, how hard you hit, if you were able to walk again after that, and then he would say, "Hey, man, you know, maybe I'll walk you back to the office, or come see me tomorrow." So in other words, he had a bird's eye view of something that not anyone gets almost these days, of the event, you know. And when you're escalating into, you know, chronic pain and really, or severe acute pain, you really want a bird's eye view of the event. And you really wish you had that sometimes, you know. And we say, oh, gosh, if I was only a fly on the wall with all these patients, maybe I could help them, or maybe we could see, you know, we could see, maybe do we need to do some chiropractic work? Do we need to do some massage? Do we need to do some spinal alignments? Do we need to do some injections into their spines? Do we need to replace some cartilage or some tissue or whatever? Or do we need to be looking, instead of saying that they fell because their leg went out, maybe we don't need to look at their leg all the time. Maybe we need to look at a scan of their brain. So, you know, all of these different things are out there, and to be able to conceptually say, "I hurt," that's so general these days. And I really think that all of those ideas are where treatments and patterns and systems lie, in which we have to continue to walk down that path to find some of the answers.
Absolutely. I think that that is certainly the path that we all strive to treat patients on, and continue to strive for better treatments. Again, looking for the underlying cause. And as technology has gotten better and more complicated, I think that a lot, you know, diagnoses that we may not have been able to make, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, we're now making more readily. And that adds another layer of complexity because we're now seeing conditions that, you know, just weren't prevalent in the days past. So that adds another layer of complexity. And then I think that's one of the big challenges of medicine is that it is very complex, and pain is no stranger to complexity. I think the complexity of making a diagnosis, you know, when you have a, when you have pain in your leg, you know, most people think, hey, I've got a problem here in my leg, but it actually could be a pinched nerve in your spine that's actually causing the problem. And just making that leap of sort of that referred pain, and it could be mm-hmm. something distant from where I'm actually feeling the pain, that in and of itself is something that patients have a hard time accepting. So I think it is, it's a very complicated issue, and hopefully we, you know, continue to work, you know, using technology and leveraging that to really diagnose patients early and accurately, and we prevent that progression from acute to chronic pain.
Yeah, because, boy, I'll tell you, I think pain is a fact of life. I don't think you could ever, if you lined everybody up on the day they were going to die and asked them if they had pain, everyone 100% would raise their hands. I think we would all say, "What did it last for a long time? Probably. Did it last too long? Probably." And were we frustrated and angry by it? And I think we would all say yes, because we felt that it hurt your body, and you didn't want your body to hurt. You felt it should not hurt. You know, you didn't want to feel that something was, quote, wrong, or you didn't want to feel that you weren't able to, quote, live your life again, or like something was taken away from you. I think a lot of times when we see chronic pain, we say our life is taken away from us, our enjoyment is taken away, I can't do that job anymore. And I think that's very consistent with people becoming frustrated, angry, depressed, and really going down that wrong rabbit hole, right?
Absolutely, and I agree with what you're saying about, you know, pain, and you know, we're sort of stuck with it, and I think that what lends support to that idea and that concept is, you know, when you do look at a syndrome that I talk about in my book called congenital insensitivity to pain, which unfortunately affects about 1 in 25,000 people, these are children that are born without the ability to feel or sense pain. And if you look at those children, unfortunately, they suffer from injuries, and these are injuries they may not even be aware of, and because they don't have pain as an alarm system. And as a result of those injuries, those multiple injuries, sometimes even self-inflicted, the children develop complications, generally infections, and those infections eventually, you know, usually will result in potentially loss of life. And so that if you look at that extreme example of what life would be like without pain, you start to realize that there really is a protective function that it serves. And if, you know, obviously the extreme of having, excruciating pain is obviously not desirable either, we've got to kind of look for that middle ground. How do we live with pain, but at the same time learn how to better manage it? And I think that, you know, back to what you mentioned earlier, resilience, I think that pain is mm-hmm. absolutely a transformative event in our lives. It brings about change in some way, maybe not the way that you would want at the time, but it does. And I think that whether you're looking at, you know, a hero, a real-life hero, or a mythological hero, I mean, all of these folks have faced adversity. They've faced pain somewhere in their lives. And I think that, you know, obviously we as a society, we can learn a lot from that. We can learn how it can be a transformative event and try to look at it that way. And I think if we start to reframe it that way, we may actually start to be able to reduce the burden of chronic pain in our society.
And Dr. Anish, in closing, I think also to on the light side, to understand that that pain is temporary in some cases, pain can be transformed and it can be treated. And to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to get up and go find some help and find it wherever you need to. It could be at a regular physician's alternative cares. It could be at your therapist. It could be at your church. It could be anywhere. But to really to not suffer in silence, I think that's really the purpose of this whole hour, is to be able to say don't suffer in silence just because you don't feel like you're the hero or you're not going to be welcomed or you're not going to look like the type of person that could, quote, always just push through. Maybe you can't. Maybe you need help. Maybe you need support, and to be able to go find it.
Absolutely. I think that that's, I agree with those points. I think that, again, you are not alone. If you suffer from pain, whether it's acute pain or chronic pain, you are not alone. There's others out there like you, and we can all learn from each other. And I think that looking at pain from a different perspective, which is, we've got to learn how to live with some amount of pain, but at the same time also do a good job of managing it, I think is a much better perspective than expecting to live life with zero pain.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Anish, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be great.
Oh, absolutely. You can go to my website, which is www.anishsinglamd.com, and that's just my first and last name with an MD at the end. You can also go to my book website, which is www.whyithurtsbook.com. My book is available for pre-order through Amazon and will also be available at many retail stores in May.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was a real pleasure to have you share about pain. And I can honestly say, as we've said, is that almost everybody has it. It's just about our perception, our insight, and our ability to be able to find where it's coming from and to be able to move on through life. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Dr. Jeanette. I really appreciate it, and thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. And if you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Anish Singla, again, the book is Why It Hurts, A Physician's Insights on the Purpose of Pain. Please do check out the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll go directly to his website. And please do not suffer in silence. That is what this radio show is all about, is speaking up, speaking out. Irregardless, there is no judgment. Judgment is gone. If you don't find the right person, hey, turn around, get a phone book, or get your Google out and find someone else. There are people out there who will listen, and that's really what we need, is someone to be able to open the door and say, I hear you. Find the person that says, I hear you. Now we can go together to be able to help you towards better health. That's the goal. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.